Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show.
10 seconds to go. Parkey lines it up. O'Donnell on one knee. Gives him a look, extends his right arm. Scales sends it back. Placement made. Kick by Parkey from 43, and it hit the upright. It is no good on the crossbar. And the Eagles are celebrating here at Soldier Field. Wow. Deflating his 11th missed kick. Inches away from a trip to the NFC Divisional Playoff.
The moment Bears fans dreaded would happen actually happened. Season on the line, Cody Parkey's game-winning try gets tipped, hits the upright, the crossbar falls back into play. Game over. 12-win season over. Who deserves the most blame? How did this offense only manage 15 points? And why couldn't the defense get a stop with the game on the line? We'll answer all those questions and a whole lot more. Sports Talk Live on location at the United Center with Blackhawks Authentic Fan Night. Make sure to share your Blackhawks fandom using the hashtag AuthenticFan. Your photos might be shown during tonight's game. This show starts right now. And good evening. Welcome to Sports Talk Live from the concourse here at the United Center. I'm David Kaplan. Our great partners are the people that run the Chevy Silverado, the men to my left, David Haw from The Score and the Chicago Tribune, Adam Johns, Chicago Sun-Times, Charlie Romeliotis, NBC Sports Chicago. All right, we all feared it. I asked the question to almost every guest on this show last week. Okay, you're down, your game's on the line. Are you going for it on fourth down, or are you letting Cody Parkey try a somewhere in the 45-yard range field goal? Well, this one came down to 10 seconds to go. He's got to make the kick, and he can't do it. Bears go home. David, this was a heartbreaking loss because the season came out of nowhere, but when you get to 12-4 and you have the best defense in the league, you should not lose at home.
The season was not a disappointment, but the way the season ended was extremely disappointing, and there's a difference there. And I think that you could watch this kick every day until 100 times a day until the Bears report to training camp next July, and you still will have a hard time believing it because that's the sixth time he's hit an upright this year. It bounces, hits the crossbar. Yeah. Then it doesn't bounce over the crossbar to make it good like it would it be in a Hollywood movie script. It bounces the other way to make the pain even more
truly
hurt.
It's heartbreaking. Yeah. Truly unbelievable. The four times you hit it against the Lions, then last week against the Vikings. How many times have you seen in a regular season a kicker hit the uprights and it goes in? It happens all the time. He hit the uprights six times this year.
Not one went in.
It's uncanny. It really is.
Yeah, this is tough to swallow because on one hand, before the season started, if you said the Bears are going to be a field goal away from advancing to the final four in the NFC, I think you would have taken it. But the way it happened is so heartbreaking that I think but you leave Bears fans wanting a little bit more.
The last time I think Chicago sports fans felt that kind of gut punch was Rajai Davis hitting the home run against the Cubs in the World Series. But you know what? That didn't end the game. The game was still going on. The Cubs came back. We all know what happened next. This is the one, the finality of this one made it as difficult to accept because nothing now. You have to wait till next
year. The last time I felt that gut punch as a fan and the event being played in the city of Chicago was Derrick Rose blowing out his ACL in this building.
That's a good one. Yeah. I mean, that's not a good one. I mean, that's a good comparison, I think. I think the last time the end of the season, well, certainly the reaction from the fans was Bartman-esque. I think when you saw the anger and sort of the vitriol, the way the mixture of all these regret and sadness. But I'll tell you what, when we're in this building, Hawks, Kings, I think 2014 game seven of the Western Conference. Alec Martinez wins the game for the Kings. Nick Leddy wasn't his fault, but just bounced
off
his
shoulder.
Yeah. That may have been the last one.
Here's our Enken Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote and you can weigh in. We're getting a ton of votes. All right, here's the question for you. Heartbreak, Chicago style. What's the worst one? Is it the Steve Bartman one? Is it yesterday's Cody Parkey one? Is it the Kings winning that David mentioned, Rose tearing the ACL that I mentioned, or Michael Kopech announcing that he needed Tommy John surgery was a gut punch to White Sox fans last summer.
See, I don't know that the Bartman thing is a fan reaction. I mean, there wasn't a finality. Plus, the Cubs still had a shot to win that game.
Yeah, they did.
Not only that game, but the next game. It wasn't a season ender. I think that's what makes this thing a little bit different. It ended a season that felt so special.
Yeah.
And it felt like everything had gone the Bears' way. Until now.
There was a storybook finish right there. Mitch Trubisky had put you in field goal position. Yep. He was going to change his total narrative about himself,
well,
about playing in big moments.
Goal, took you down for the touchdown, too.
Yeah, yeah. He gave the defense a lead 15-10 in the fourth quarter, but you know what? It's just so unbelievable, and that unbelievable quality about it.
Okay.
Six times off the uprights.
I want you guys
unreal.
To tell me why this team, all season long, did not look as sloppy as they did yesterday, and on that one touchdown drive, you had too many men on the field. You had the Adrian Amos hit to the head, which was a clear penalty. You had the questionable, but PI, if that was the Bears receiver.
That was pass interference.
Yeah, we would all be saying it's pass interference. And then on the touchdown pass, you got 10 men on the field.
Yeah, not a good day for Vic Fangio, who's having dinner right now with John Elway somewhere in the Northern Burbs. So, look, the mental
breakdowns. Why are you
breakdowns.
Here, then? Why aren't you there?
Scouting out.
Yeah, why aren't you scouting them out at the bar?
Why aren't you out in front of the hole in the wall?
Hey, Vic, what happened? Yeah.
To have those breakdowns. And we said it going into the game, if you look at all their losses, like the Dolphins game, even the Patriots game, the Giants game, it was mental breakdowns by the defense. Missed tackles.
Yeah,
you saw those,
you're right.
You saw those problems.
You're
with
not wrong. But, Cap, you're right, too. But, look, the Eagles are a good team. They're the defending champ. They're the reigning Super Bowl champions for a reason. You know, the defense still played well enough to win. You give up the drive. You have a lead. You should protect it at home in a playoff game. Absolutely. Offense wasn't good in the first half. Mitch came on. If they win today, we're talking about the coming of age of a quarterback. You know what? All those things considered, you're all valid. Came down to a kick. They missed a 43-yard field goal. You hit that, and the whole narrative changes.
Yeah,
it's one
we
play.
We played some Rex Ryan audio on the radio earlier today, and the question was asked to Rex, do you feel bad for Cody Parkey? And Rex, in the blunt style that he is, said, no, I don't. He had a job to do, and he didn't do his job. I feel for the fans and the other 52 guys in that locker room, but I don't feel bad
for
the kicker.
Well, you can feel bad for Cody Parkey. I mean, this is unbelievable. You can respect the Bears' response to it. You can respect that he faced the music. But Rex Ryan is absolutely right. He still paid a lot of money, a lot of money, $9 million guaranteed to make kicks like that, and he missed 11 of them this year, none bigger than the one against the
Charlie,
Eagles.
Your perspective from a fan watching it last night.
I think you can feel bad for the human, but the Bears fans, your expectation as a kicker is to make those field goals, and you got that guaranteed money to do so. So when you don't produce like that, he got his chances in the regular season too, and he didn't. I think the Bears stood behind him, and they should have. But at some point, you got to make that. You got to. There's got to be some payoff at the end of it.
You have to support him publicly.
Let's hear from Cody Parkey post game.
Like I said, I mean, you can't make this up. I mean, I feel terrible. Let the team down. That's on me. So I have to own it. I have to be a man. And you know, it's unfortunately, that's the way it went today.
Your teammates quickly consoled you. I mean, does that help in that situation? Are we just numb?
Of course. I mean, that's one of the worst feelings in the world to let your team down. So I feel terrible. You know, I'm going to continue to put things in perspective, continue to just put my best foot forward and just sleep at night knowing that I did everything in my power this week to go and make that kick. And for whatever reason, at the crossbar and the upright, and I still couldn't do it. So, I feel terrible.
Give him a lot of credit. Look, when the locker room doors open and we walked in, he's waiting for everybody. And he did face the music. Look,
it's also his job.
It's not a question of accountability. It's a question of dependability. When you raise the expectations for the Chicago Bears in a market like this, you got to meet them. And if you don't meet them in a results-oriented business, this is not high school football. This is not youth football. It's professional football, and you have expectations.
Is he back in a Bears uniform?
That's a big question. I personally don't think so. There is a level of accountability in that locker room. Yes, you like that they defended him, but he's got to be part of the team, and he is responsible for making those kicks.
You can't put 52 other guys in a position to answer questions about the kicker every day, which is what that would be at Bourbonnais if he's part of this team. I don't think he should be. I don't think he will be. I think they're going to have to take care of this.
Could you imagine the scene in Bourbonnais if he's down there and he starts missing kicks?
Yeah, you have people around here like taunting him on a Tuesday morning.
Nonstop.
And
they're this close to him. Yeah. It would be a bad scene by far down there in Bourbonnais.
Yeah, so hindsight is 20/20, but did the Bears make a mistake holding on to him after those four field goal posts? Or where is the Bears' level of responsibility?
Why not at least bring competition in?
That's it. That's it, Cap. I mean, when you don't bring in any competition, you create this level of comfort that he has job security when he really shouldn't have had the job
security.
There
were five teams in the National Football League this season that changed kickers for performance reasons. There were others with injuries. Five teams changed kickers, including the Vikings, who after they tied Green Bay because Daniel Carlson missed three kicks, they released
many had $9 million, though, on the books guaranteed, including $5 million in dead money for last year? That money changes a lot. It really, really does.
It does, but should it? If you're in a position where you lost five games, you lost one game by a touchdown to the Patriots, you lost two others by 1 point, you lost two others by 3 points. If you have a kicker that you can trust, the Bears are still playing. I mean, really, if you have a kicker that's dependable, you have all sorts of things that are still possible. You don't because you wanted to save money. That's not a good look.
Okay, there were some other things that bothered me. The catch by Anthony Miller. Yeah, I get a little fired
Shocking.
Up. There was the catch by Anthony Miller. And first of all, Terry McCauley in the booth. If you're going to be the rules expert, you need to learn the rules, dude. He's in there, and you were watching on TV.
Yeah.
They're asking him the rule. He doesn't know. This was one of the guys who administered the rules. How that happens, I don't know. That's beside the point. The officials then say, we didn't have a clear recovery. Well, I timed it with my phone. 13 seconds. The ball sat on the ground. When Lovie Smith was here, and he knows I was no Lovie guy, they were taught, I don't care what the scenario is, every loose football we're diving on, and we're handing it back to the official. Because just in case,
but that's the offense. That's the offense. The offense isn't necessarily trained that way. The offense isn't necessarily trained to go jump on the
football. Tony Dungy said on the post game, you guys were in the locker room, he said, I train my teams any loose ball. Bill Belichick today had a team meeting today. And so did you see what happened in the Chicago game? That's why I harp on it. Every single loose ball gets picked up.
I'm not going to fault who is closest, Ben Broniker and Anthony Miller. They called it no catch on the field.
The whistle blew. It's
dead. It's like almost non-existent.
You're conditioned when the whistle blows to do what? Okay, next play.
Well, that's going
to
change.
And we talked to Anthony Miller after the game. He argued that he didn't think he caught the ball. And why would he lie about that? So he didn't think he made the catch.
I don't think he caught the ball. Do you think he caught the ball?
Yes, 100%.
He ripped it out of his grip.
He took three steps.
Okay, we don't know what a catch is because a catch is supposed to be the process of the catch. He did not finish the process of that catch. Craven LeBlanc went in, the ex-Bear, went in there and ripped it out of his grip. I don't know if that was a catch.
I thought it was, but I can promise you when Belichick's harping on it today.
He did.
To his team. Did you see what happened? None of them picked it up.
Headline, Cap says Nagy no Belichick. Is that what it is?
I'm saying that the next time that team gathers as a team, he will say to them, from now on, I don't care what scenario, you pick up the ball and you hand it to the
still think that's more of a message for the defense. Go back like 5 years ago when James Anderson didn't pick up that ball against the Packers.
Yeah, that's
message for the defense. Packers weren't running to get that ball either. So I think
it's hard to kill a coach from not drilling his offensive lineman to go chase fumbles. I just don't think you do that.
25 yards down the field.
Well, they're going to now. Anthony Miller was from here to Danny Wysocki, right there. Pick the football up and hand it to
the
official.
People at TV can't see Danny Wysocki behind the camera. She's about 10 feet away.
She's right there.
All right.
She's the best. So I'm just telling you, that one bothered me. The penalties and the 10 men on the field on the touchdown drive.
The Dallas Goedert.
And then here's the other thing. It's the number one defense in the National Football League. And I know they kept him to 16 points. Never saw one humongous play down the stretch. You let them go down the field, and your punter, who you brought back here and said, hey, you're the guy. You drafted him in 2014. We don't see too many punters draft. 36-yard punt.
Pat O'Donnell had his worst punt of the season and then his best punt of the season in the same game.
Yeah. And to go back to your point about your big-time playmakers on defense, Lane Johnson and Jason Peters, the offensive tackle,
they were awesome.
Had a great game. Great game plan for Khalil Mack specifically.
Khalil Mack was the guy you were waiting to wreck that game. And he did, but you can't hold that against him.
Guys, enlighten me. What is the fascination with Taequann Mizell? Why is he getting carries and Tariq Cohen got four touches in one carry?
Here's my argument. Well, the Eagles did a good job of eliminating Cohen. They had like two guys on him almost every time. They just seemed to shadow him wherever he went.
They went into that game designed to stop Tariq Cohen.
Especially when Trey Burton was not part of the game plan anymore.
Yeah, what happened to him?
Yeah, they focused on
Tariq
tomorrow. Cohen.
I will.
But the Taequann Mizell puzzle, I think there's a job in Matt Nagy's offense for a player who's not yet on the roster. They want another running back who could be maybe a bigger version of Tariq Cohen. Not on the roster.
They want you could have just put a period there, Adam. They want another running back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Tariq Cohen is their
speed,
guy.
Ability to catch the football.
Jordan Howard had a serviceable year, right? Taequann Mizell played because they weren't enamored with everything that Jordan Howard had to offer.
Right.
You've got to find a combination of those guys that can be, whether it's in free agency, whether it's in the third round of the draft, whether they need an upgrade at running back.
It's hard to explain. Kareem Hunt led the league in rushing last year for Matt Nagy's Chiefs offense. This year, Jordan Howard averaged 3.7 yards per carry, good enough for 49th in the NFL amongst qualified running backs. That's bad.
Yeah. What was your take on Nagy's offense in the first half? Because the BU on the play card, which I love, it was don't BU in the first half.
Yeah, he was a little conservative, but I don't know. I felt Mitch Trubisky was actually subpar in the first half, and then he really responded. So I think the game plan kind of changed. And I don't know how much did Matt Nagy's game plan change, because the night before, Trey Burton's not playing, and then they're double-teaming Tariq Cohen all day. So, like, how much did that throw him through a loop offensively?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think they're related. Trubisky was ordinary because the game plan in the first half was more conventional. The Bears were safer before halftime for whatever reason. But you have to look at it objectively, too. I mean, Mitch was tight. It's his first playoff start. When you look at other quarterbacks making their first playoff starts, you know, his wasn't so bad by comparison. Deshaun Watson struggled. Lamar Jackson was a joke for the first half. Mitch got better steadily each quarter.
Do you guys all kind of put the bow on this season and go, wow, we actually think we have a quarterback going forward? Because I've never seen a player in our town where you either love him or you hate him.
Well, that's human nature. I mean, I think that's human nature, but I think that there has been an extreme divide with Mitch Trubisky. A lot of polarizing opinions. Last guy that did that was Rex Grossman, right? Good Rex, bad Rex. I think the Bears have a quarterback they can trust. I think they feel good about him moving
long-term.
And you go back to August, what was the number one priority this season? It wasn't going 12-4 and getting to the playoffs. It was developing a quarterback and making sure that this was the right guy.
Yeah, and in every major statistical category, he improved. Every single one off of last year. Yes, it helped to have Matt Nagy. Yes, it helped to have better weapons. But part of that is him as well. And you know what? When he needed him the most, in the biggest game of the year against the Eagles, he showed up. He made some big-time throws, went 3-4.
That throw right there was phenomenal.
Yes, the 25-yarder put him in field goal range. He made big throws when he needed him the most in the biggest moments against the Eagles.
Yeah, I think next season is going to be kind of the make or break for a lot of Bears fans, whether they should trust him or whether they can't. Because the first year doesn't really count, because John Fox didn't really, you know, he came in.
That doesn't count.
Right, it doesn't count. But I want to see the second full season under Matt Nagy, because he took the step this year. He took the big step this year. Now I want to see if it's sustainable.
Look, the question about Mitch going into last night was, okay, all year, can he take a team that's trailing down the field for a meaningful touchdown drive?
He did.
Can he lead a team from behind? He did that twice.
Yeah.
You know, the fourth quarter, he was on. It was three clutch throws in a row, and then with 48 seconds left, he put the Bears in a position to win that game.
The two best throws he made was the one we just showed to Allen Robinson down the right sideline in between two defenders. Thought that was a sensational throw. And then the one that he hit, I think Taylor
Gabriel.
Third and nine for a 22-yard
game. With Fletcher Cox in his face, 19 yards in the middle through zone coverage. Absolute laser. And Cox, he lit him up on that play, too.
He did. Spectacular
throw. Stood in there against the pressure. Exceptional
throw. I also like it because I think he was playing a little hurt. I mean, after he went into the injury tent, he came out, he said his heel was hurting. When you take his running game away from him, I think you limit his passing game. He's not, you know, he needs both. He's a complementary type quarterback. And so he was playing with a little bit of a one-dimensional because he couldn't move clearly as well as he typically moves. Now, he looks pretty good there. But even there, like, he pulls up lame.
That's the play.
And that's the play he, you know, kind of tweaked it a little bit. So he was not the same elusive quarterback after that that we're used to seeing.
Look, the expectations will change next year. It's no secret about that. Yeah, for everybody. The Bears ranked 21st total offense and 21st in passing offense. That's not going to cut it next year for Matt Nagy and Mitch Trubisky in year two together. Just
I am shocked by the results. Again, you can go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Biggest heartbreak in Chicago sports since 2000. How the Bartman play isn't running away and hiding, I don't know.
People are tired of that, Cap. That was a fan. That wasn't a player.
The Cubs World Series wouldn't help with that.
Recency bias.
They're fatigued by it, but we'll see. Anyway, let's talk about Trey Burton. And this is a guy who they needed. Adam Shaheen, I don't want to see him try and be elusive
over a small
corner or safety coming up. You're 260 pounds, for crying out loud. Run somebody over. But Trey Burton, I thought that was a huge loss out of the lineup.
Yeah, no, I agree. And especially when it comes 24 hours before the game actually starts, how much did that affect your game plan going forward? And how much did it affect Trubisky or Cohen? Like, there are a lot of moving parts to that. I still find it bizarre that the explanation, I don't know, I think he gave an explanation today.
I was in the locker room today. He said his groin got tight on Friday. I'm completely locked up on him on Saturday. Dan Weider from the Tribune asked him if his history of dealing with anxiety played a role. He said, I don't think so. It's interesting.
Here's Trey Burton today in the Bears locker room at Halas Hall.
I thought I was fine. I thought I'd be able to, push through it. Didn't get any treatment. I thought I was good, and then went to sleep Friday night and woke up and was completely locked.
How difficult was it to not only admit that, but then to have to just watch yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, you let my team down, I hate it, especially going against, one of my former teams and playoff game, all the implications and all that was definitely tough.
What all did you do Sunday morning to try to get it unlocked?
Everything possible.
What all did that include?
A lot of stuff. I don't really want to get into it, but everything possible.
At what point did you realize I'm not going to be able to play?
Probably right before they had to put out the inactive list.
What were the emotions like?
Frustrated. Extremely frustrated.
So,
I don't think you ever want to get in a position where you're questioning the toughness of a professional athlete.
Agreed.
I don't think we know what they went through. I think the fact that he's had a history with anxiety and the fact that he talked about early in the year not wanting to throw the Philly special because of he got nervous about that. He's been very open about that. You talk to him every week on your radio show, and he's very candid on that. And I think you give him the benefit of the doubt. At the same time, you can't deny that his answer today was a little bit odd by saying, I don't think so. And also the fact that they practiced with him all week and then they weren't able to play with him in the game, you put Shaheen, you put Broniker in situations they didn't practice all week. That hurt the game plan, and that hurt Trubisky.
But the one thing is, this guy played and played well in the Super Bowl on the biggest stage.
As a secondary guy, although he did throw the Philly special touchdown, I get it, but just to hear him explain the way he locks up when injuries like this happen, like it's with his groin now. He said it happened with his back. He called it a defense mechanism for his body. So just a lot of things going on.
When you walked away from him today, did you think it was 100% physical, the reason that
I didn't, but I don't want to reach any grand conclusions here because I don't know the full story. I don't know what's going on. If he is dealing with some anxiety issues, I hope he gets help. This is a serious thing for a lot of people across the world. So if that's the case, I hope he gets some answers for him.
All right. Again, a really, really tough situation as the Bears fall in heartbreaking fashion. If you told me that they blocked the kick and smothered it, it is what it is.
Oh, I don't know if you heard, Cap. The kick was tipped.
Yeah, they called it tipped.
And I've only received 755 texts today.
Yeah, same.
The kick was tipped.
Yeah, and I watched it a billion times today. I mean, it might have gotten the tip of his finger.
Okay, in fairness, it was tipped. So it was technically the NFL ruled it officially a blocked field goal.
Yeah.
Okay, doesn't it have to do something with how low the trajectory was coming out of the hole?
There's mechanics and all sorts of things with the kicker.
That's got to be on the kicker,
I'll tell you one thing that bothered me when I heard it was both Chris Long and maybe Malcolm Jenkins said, hey, man, loved him as a teammate. He's a great guy. But when he made the first one on the timeout.
Jason Peters said that.
Jason Peters as well.
Then he said he wanted to thank him.
He said, I knew there was no way he was making the second one because he barely got that one over the crossbar.
I think he went through the routine on the first one when he was iced. Didn't seem like he went fully through it, which kind of looks like his extra points. But, Yeah, it's alarming. It's really disconcerting to see what they're going to do with this.
Robbie Gould was in Soldier Field yesterday.
With his family watching.
You mean pending free agent
to
Robbie Gould.
Robbie Gould.
Yes, 2019 free agent in a few months, Robbie Gould.
We're going to find out.
What's
see
his
what
price?
Happens. All right, we've got to take a timeout. It is Authentic Fan Night here tonight at the Blackhawks game. They're giving out these sweet hats. These things are awesome, man. David and I both pilfered one. Anyway, check out our website, NBCSportsChicago.com/vote for our poll question. We'll talk more Bears, Blackhawks, and even the Bulls made a deal today. So a lot to get to. This is Sports Talk Live brought to you by the Chevy Silverado.
So, you call yourself a Blackhawks fan? NBC Sports Chicago wants to hear from you. Visit NBCSportsChicago.com/BlackhawksAF and tell us what makes you the biggest Hawks fan. You could win the chance to be recognized as our Blackhawks authentic fan of the game, including tickets to a game, a behind-the-scenes tour, be shown on TV, and much more. NBCSportsChicago.com/BlackhawksAF.
Hey, do you know someone who is a Blackhawks authentic fan? We want to hear from you, share your stories, and nominate a Blackhawks super fan for their chance to become our next authentic fan of the game. Enter at NBCSportsChicago.com/BlackhawksAF. Michelle McMahon is here from our Blackhawks coverage and our NBC Sports Chicago family. All right, Blackhawks have won now 10 consecutive games over the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are one of the better franchises in the league. What are they doing?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think they would like to answer as well. But got to give credit to the Blackhawks. They love that matchup. They just dominate it. And obviously on a good stretch, Charlie, you've been covering this pretty closely as well. I think this is one of the games that Jeremy Colleton alluded to, that this team has a lot of fight in them. This is a game a month ago that maybe all of us would have thought, oh, here we go again, down two. But they rallied back and found a way to get it done.
Yeah, I would say for the last month now, they've really been playing structured hockey in really every single game except that Florida game right before the Christmas break. They've been in, and they're competing. I think they're 7-3-2 over their last 12 games. So they're really into it, and they're really competing hard in these games. And the roster personnel still needs a little bit of work, but they're adding pieces to the puzzle like Drake Kajula.
You change coaches, and the style could not be more different, and go from Joel Quenneville to a 33-year-old first-time head coach. How have the players adapted, and how much credit do you give Jeremy Colleton for, you know, when he first took over, that was a tough month. It was a very difficult stretch. And here they are, the last 12 games, they've been more than competitive.
Yeah, I think it comes from, you know, the transition of emotion. First, you're shocked. Then you reflect on how the first part of the season went. If you're one of the athletes thinking, what could I have done better? I know Patrick Kane took a big, you know, responsibility in that. If I wasn't sick that game, would he not have gotten fired? Would he have? But you get through that initial shock period, and then you realize, okay, we got to start winning hockey games, regardless of who's our coach. How do we get this thing back on track? So no matter who's in the locker room, they figured it out. I think I don't know if they've fully figured it out. There's still lapses in there, but I think the phases of emotions as it cycled through for the Blackhawks, I think they went from shock to now reorganizing and just finding ways
to win. Any update on Corey Crawford?
No. I think Scott Powers from The Athletic wrote, talked to Stan Bowman yesterday and said, when Corey's ready to return, they expect him to play. So that's all we've heard, but we haven't heard any progress on whether he's dealing with symptoms, whether it's precautionary that he's on IR. I don't know. The good news is he was at the United Center a week after the concussion happened. So he went MIA for the first month after he suffered the concussion the first time around. So I think it's a positive sign that he's at least on his own. There are no reports. The Blackhawks seem, I don't want to say upbeat, but they don't
seem
too
concerned.
They've
been pretty good in net, though. That has not been a challenge.
Yeah. Getting a good sample size of Colin Delia.
What's he like? Colin Delia has been a revelation. I think nobody expected him to be this good. What's he like? Goalies have this sort of quirky personalities at times. They can be a little different. How would you describe him?
I like him. He's got that. I mean, all goalies are quirky to some extent, but he's from California.
Edge to him.
He's relaxed. Like, he's humble, which is important, but very confident. So, like, a very good balance of that, but he has, I like his perspective. Like, he's very open-minded, he's very self-aware, and he's also very open to being coached, but also not to the point where he feels like he belongs here.
Did he expect this? Because I don't know that anybody did. I mean, you got Cam Ward just in case Corey Crawford couldn't go. Corey Crawford couldn't go. Cam Ward is sort of taking a back seat because Delia has been the guy that you want to develop.
What, he have a 46 save game in New York?
And then he followed that up with a 48 save game. So he's been...
And then his first win in Colorado.
Yes. I mean, he's got one of the best... I think he's got the second best save percentage at 5-on-5 this season. So I think three of the goals that they've scored on him have come from 5-on-5, and the rest have been on the power play. So that's just impressive. I think to answer your question, David, I don't think he ever lost belief in himself.
Right.
But I think maybe at some point, if you're playing in the ECHL, you're going to doubt whether you're going to be able to get to the NHL and become a full-time starter. But I don't think he ever lost belief.
Did they believe prior to him coming up, hey, we've got our young goaltender in our system, and we know he's our number one guy.
I don't think he was that guy, was he? He wasn't never that guy.
Well, he beat out Forsberg.
Like, he wasn't their Eloy Jimenez.
I think they thought Forsberg was going to be the guy.
Yeah,
right.
And then he took a back seat, and then Colin Delia exploded in Rockford, especially in the playoffs. And then they're like, okay, wait a second. We have to restructure our goalie depth chart here because Colin seems to be ahead of the curve than Anton Forsberg.
So the big topic with the Blackhawks is always the defense, right? And that was at the Winter Classic. Connor Murphy was... I thought he played a really strong game, very physical game, had a lot of hits. I think he had 6 hits in the Winter Classic. Where is he, and how important is he as the Blackhawks sort of try to bolster that blue line?
I think certainly important, but for me, Erik Gustafsson has been equally impressive with his offensive prowess.
He's one of my favorite players to watch this season.
Yeah, and just the way he's been able to create that offense. I know the Blackhawks are really up on
what
him,
changed?
On his potential.
Because he's exploded.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question, but I think a lot of it, too, is giving him that leash to run offensively and not being so limited that he has to completely worry so much about defense. It seems like the system they're running, they're getting a lot more support from their forwards, which takes a lot of pressure off of them, but that's a good question as well.
Right. I think there is a lot more balance on the back end with Connor Murphy in the lineup. He wasn't going to step in and be this game changer on defense where he's going to be a top four guy. I mean, he's playing top 4 minutes. He's slotted in the third pairing role, but he's playing top 4 minutes, and he's really stabilized the back end of the defense. And then you bring in Gustav Forsing and Carl Dahlstrom. Like, it's finally filtering out on defense.
Do you feel like Alex DeBrincat has sort of been buried on the third line at times? Do you think that he's a guy that could benefit from more opportunities with other centers and other lines?
Yeah, I do. It's hard because... Those first two lines, I asked Jeremy this morning about it. Those first two lines have been together for quite a few games now, and they haven't done anything to warrant being separated. So Dominic Cahoon is the guy that kind of exploded onto the scene. He's not really a goal scorer, but he's producing on the first line and being that complement. But if you take Cahoon away and put DeBrincat there, then your bottom six kind of thins out. So, yeah, it's tough.
Do you believe that as we get towards All-Star Weekend, into trading season, that the Blackhawks will divest of some of their bigger veterans to try and get better for the future, or
Cap wants to know, are they going to tank?
No,
the Hawks going to tank?
No, I don't think they're going to.
Divest.
Divest.
That was a very politically correct word.
Yeah, correct. Are they going to tank? Yes, you want to know.
Are they going to invest or divest?
Because if they get the number one pick in the draft, they get a guy that they can plug and play next year.
Jack Hughes.
Nobody's going to try to lose. I mean,
I can't see that here. I can't see that them doing that.
I don't see that happening. You might have a different answer. I don't see. Because everything they've said to this point, including firing of Joel Quenneville, this is a playoff team. And every step of the way, they've held that standard.
All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll come right back. We'll wrap it up, get you set. And don't forget, you can get our podcast at NBCSportsChicago.com. Find it all over Twitter. We'll be right back and get you off the Blackhawks pregame.
For Chicago Sports Talk with Sizzle, crank up the heat and turn on STL. Host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table every weeknight on the topics that are trending with our teams. Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado, weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.